Yeah, what's Universal Time? Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Syrian activists say airstrikes targeted two opposition-held towns in northwest Syria, Marad al-Numan and Karen Falbel in Idlib province, killing at least 44 people. The strikes come amid fighting launched by rebels in the coastal province of Latakia. There's also fighting in and around the northern city Aleppo. In Geneva, the main opposition group pulled back from UN-facilitated proximity peace talks with the Syrian regime. Salim Meslat is a spokesman for the High Negotiations Committee.
I believe we made the right decision now, because what's going on there on the ground, it's really, what we're having for the last few days is really a great deal of a pressure from inside Syria because of the crimes that Assad is committing there.
The opposition chief coordinator Riyad Hijab has urged the 17-nation International Syria Support Group to intervene. South Sudanese rebel leader Riek Machar failed to return to the capital Juba for a second straight day Tuesday, saying the government didn't provide flight clearance for a plane carrying his top general. He's supposed to arrive as part of a peace deal signed last August to end 2.5 years of civil war. U.S. spokesman John Kirby expressed Washington's disappointment over Machar's failure to return, representing what he called a willful decision not to abide by the deal.
His failure to go to Juba, despite efforts from the international community, places the people of South Sudan at risk of further conflict and suffering, and undermines the peace agreement's reform pillars, which are demilitarizing South Sudan, injecting transparency of public finances, and pursuing justice and reconciliation, all of which offer South Sudan a chance for renewal.
The government spokesman said one of Machar's generals was trying to bring in more than 200 extra soldiers beyond the agreed number of rebel troops allowed in, as well as weapons, a charge a rebel spokesman denied. This is VOA News. Real estate billionaire businessman Donald Trump and former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton emerged Tuesday as big winners in the New York presidential primary election. Trump thanked his supporters.
This has been an incredible evening. It's been an incredible day and week. We went all over New York State. New York State has problems like virtually every other state in the union.
Those problems, he said, include a loss of jobs. He predicted he'll be the nominee at the July Republican Party convention. Clinton, meanwhile, maintains a wide lead over her lone rival, Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, for her Democratic Party's nomination. The next election races are scheduled Tuesday in 5 eastern states, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, Connecticut, Delaware, and Maryland. Hundreds of millions of dollars in emergency aid and rescue workers from all over the world are pouring into Ecuador as the death toll from Saturday's powerful earthquake now is at 480, with some 1,700 still listed as missing, more than 2,500 injured. Rescuers and citizens along the Pacific coast have used everything from heavy equipment and dogs to bare hands to dig through collapsed homes and stores, straining to listen for buried survivors. Among the fortunate ones rescued is Pablo Cordova, who said when he phoned his wife, she thought he was joking. He identified himself. He said he was alive. Saturday's massive 7.8 quake was felt across the entire country. The coastal cities of Puerto Viejo, Manta, and Pernales were hit the hardest. Relief workers are struggling to provide emergency aid to thousands forced to evacuate their homes after 2 deadly earthquakes that struck southern Japan last week. Many of the 100,000 evacuees on the island of Kyushu are huddled in makeshift shelters amid a serious lack of food and water. The top U.N. official in Somalia told the Security Council Tuesday progress is being made in the country's 2016 election. Michael Keating said Somali leaders from all federal member states and interim regional administrations have reached agreement on the electoral model to be used. He said the process this year will be vastly different from the one held in 2012.
The electoral college will be 100 times larger. There will be a genuine choice of candidates. Voting will take place not just in Mogadishu, but in each of the capitals or seats of government of the existing and emerging federal member states.
Somali President Hassan Sheikh Mohammed told the council that he agreed to an electoral college with nearly 14,000 who elect members of parliament, taking the beleaguered Horn of Africa nation a step closer to universal suffrage. Members of Yemen's warring factions indicate they plan to arrive Wednesday in Kuwait for UN-sponsored peace talks that were to have begun Monday. Meanwhile, the military sources on the ground are quoted as saying at least 13 were killed in fighting between forces loyal to the government and Houthi rebels in Marib province. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, April 20th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The UN Security Council met Tuesday as there was yet another no-show for South Sudan rebel leader and first vice president Riek Machar.
I saw him coming yesterday, but he did not come. Today also, I expected him to come today. He has not come. Then what do you expect me to know after this? I don't know when he...
That's South Sudan Information Minister Michael Mankwi. Meanwhile, there was also disappointment in South Sudan. Oromo people in the United States marched in Washington for Oromia rights. And the U.S. says Burundian President Pierre Nkurunziza is the driver, not a victim, of the crisis in his country. Zimbabwe police blocked a demonstration against an assault on Patson Zamora, and a Kenya musical brings Africa folklore to life. Those stories, plus Mark Olman's post and our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The future of South Sudan has been thrown into limbo as the expected return of South Sudan rebel leader Riek Machar has been repeatedly delayed. Machar was due to return to Juba on Monday and be sworn in as the country's first vice president, but he was no show again. The UN Security Council late Tuesday held consultations on the situation in South Sudan. Ambassador David Pressman, alternate permanent representative of the United States to the United Nations, expressed U.S. disappointment in Machar's repeated delay to return to Juba. Pressman says the UN expects Riek Machar and all parties to live up to their commitments under the peace agreement and do their part to establish the transitional government.
I just would say at this stage we're extremely concerned that Riek Machar has not returned to Juba, as he has publicly stated he would do and as he is committed to do under the agreement. And I look forward to engaging council colleagues to discuss next steps.
Meanwhile, the chairperson of the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, former Botswana President Festus Mogae, has said the August 2015 peace agreement is at risk. He has called an extraordinary meeting of the commission tomorrow, Thursday. South Sudan rebels have been given reasons why their leader, Riek Machar, once again canceled his expected return to Juba. The rebels say Machar's return was canceled because South Sudanese authorities did not grant permission for the charter plane of rebel chief of staff Simon Gatwa to fly over South Sudanese airspace. But South Sudan government says Machar's failure to return to Juba will further delay the formation of the transitional government of national unity. Mugumi Davis Rakarinch reports for VOA from Juba.
I saw him coming yesterday, but he did not come. Today also, I expected him to come today. He has not come. Then what do you expect me to know after this? I don't know when he will be coming.
That is South Sudan's Information Minister, Michael Mankwi, voicing his frustration over rebel leader Riek Machar's second cancellation of his return to Juba in as many days. Just like yesterday, tight security was visible around the capital as the country anticipated Machar's expected arrival. Hundreds of military personnel could be seen stationed along the roads leading to and from the airport and at main government installations. And once again, security operatives prevented motorists from driving near the airport. Many people did not report to work and students stayed home. Some shops remained closed. By the afternoon, though, it was clear Machar was not coming again. William Ezekiel is the SPLM IO Advance Team spokesman.
We are deeply sorry once again to announce cancellation of the arrival of His Excellency Dr. Riek Machar, first vice president, for issue of related to logistics, one. Two, also, there is another demand that came up that the flight of the plane of Chief of General Staff must obtain clearance to use South Sudan airspaces.
Ezekiel says the South Sudan government demanded that before the SPLO-IO General Chief of Staff, Lieutenant General Simon Gatwech-Dol, fly over South Sudan airspace, the plane's pilot must first receive permission from South Sudan authorities. Ezekiel says the SPLM-IO office still has no knowledge as to when the clearance of Dol's plane will be granted by government authorities. Makwei says Machar was planning to come with up to 200 to 500 additional soldiers beyond what was called for in the agreement and heavy weapons.
Today, the 19th April 2016, the government was informed that he wanted to come with an arsenal of arms, inter alia, anti-tanks, laser-guided missiles, and heavy machine guns. The total number of the SPLA-IO forces, beside the police, to be in Juba as agreed by the parties in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, on the 3rd of November 2015, is 1,410 officers, NCOs, and men.
The two sides continue to disagree on the cantonment areas in Equatoria and Bahal al-Ghazal areas, the number of troops in Juba, and President Salva Kiir's creation of the 28 states. Makwei says the government has abided by the agreement.
The government and the people of the Republic of South Sudan have been waiting for the arrival of the first vice president designate so that he comes in, he takes his oath, and thereafter submits the list of his nominees to the president so that the transitional government of national unity is established. But now with him deciding to call off his coming to Juba indefinitely, that will be up to the president and the government of South Sudan to decide on the way forward.
Tens of thousands of people have been killed in the more than 2 years conflict, and more than 2 million people have been displaced, according to the United Nations. Aid agencies have also warned of looming famine unless the fighting ends so people can return their farms and plant crops. Makwei says the two sides must figure out how to trust each other so they can move forward and form the transitional government. For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Ruakarinji in Juba.
The U.S. Special Envoy for the Great Lakes region of Africa says Burundian President Pierre Nkurunziza is the driver, not a victim, of the crisis in his country, whether on the political or economic side. Tom Perillo says as long as the Burundian government remains on this course, it will be difficult for the international community to help. He says there are times when it feels like the international community has taken one step forward and two steps backwards in its dealings with the Burundian government.
We had concrete pledges from the president himself just a few weeks ago about the release of political prisoners. We have not seen that. We saw a pledge from the president himself about 200 African Union monitors, and there continues to be games played. So here we are at a time that the government says they are committed to making sure all Burundians feel safe returning to their country, at the same time that we see systematic documentation of torture and extrajudicial killing. This is a kind of doublespeak that doesn't build confidence in the government or the path forward. A lot of the cards are in the hands of the government of whether or not they are interested in trying to solve this economic and political crisis by delivering on the pledges that they've made at the highest level.
Perillo praised the East African community and its mediation efforts with the addition of former Tanzania President Benjamin Mkapa. But Perillo says all the cards are in the hands of the Burundian government, whether or not it is interested in solving the economic and political crisis by delivering on the pledges it has made. Perillo also praised neighboring countries for taking in Burundian refugees.
First, we want to thank the neighboring countries for having accepted refugee flows, Tanzania most notably taking the bulk of the refugees. I visited the camps in western Tanzania twice now. And in part, that was to be able to go back to our own capital and others and advocate for greater spending along with others. We did increase our support to UNHCR to support Burundian refugees. As you know, we are at a historic crisis level of refugees globally. And certainly for understandable reasons, the one that gets the most attention right now is the Syrian refugee crisis into Europe. We have tried to work very hard to ensure while addressing that problem, that it is not at the expense of remembering that there are other refugee crises around the world, such as the one in Burundi. So we have supported UNHCR efforts. We've worked with the partner governments. Tanzania in particular was willing to open up a second and now third camp for the one that was initially seriously overcrowded, and conditions have improved there.
Tom Perillo is the U.S. Special Envoy for the Great Lakes region of Africa. He spoke in Washington. He spoke in Bujumbura on Tuesday. Today is Wednesday, April 20th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington, and please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 15 minutes past the hour. Hundreds of people from Ethiopia's Oromo ethnic group marched in Washington yesterday to protest what they say is the Ethiopian government's violation of their rights. The Oromo people have been holding peaceful protests since November last year against the Ethiopian government's plan to take over their land as it tries to expand the capital city, Addis Ababa. They also came to attend a briefing on Capitol Hill about the human rights situation in Oromia. Journalist Mohammed Ademo was one of the panelists. He said the briefing shed light on how Ethiopia's anti-terrorism law is being misused to stifle dissent.
The Oromo people who are protesting on the streets for the last 5 months in the face of a brutal crackdown, they are asking for Ethiopian government to respect the constitution of the country, which allows and gives every ethnic group in Ethiopia the right to elect their leaders and the right to autonomy, and also to be able to freely exercise their constitutional rights. And the government is not willing to do that. And as you know, or you listeners know, the government has responded to peaceful calls within the constitutional bounds with brutal crackdown. And unfortunately, in just the last 5 months alone, we have reports that about 400 people have been killed. And so what we are asking is for the government to respect the constitution, allow Oromo people to exercise their constitutional and God-given rights in that country.
The way I understand is that the Ethiopian government is trying to improve the capital city region and would like for these people to move. Is that a correct interpretation?
No, but that's what the government is saying. What is going on is, to sort of provide more context, the government is trying to expand the boundaries of the capital city, Addis Ababa, by 20 times its current size. What that means is the expansion will displace approximately about 6 million Oromo farmers who live in the adjacent districts and the surrounding villages. Now, these people have never been consulted in this development planning. People who have been moved have not been compensated for the loss that they have to endure, and they're losing their house, they're losing the land that their ancestors passed on to them for generations, and they're losing their livelihood, they're losing their culture.
What role do you think the United States can play in the situation concerning the Oromia people?
I think Congress has a lot of tools at its disposal that it can use. For example, Ethiopia is the largest recipient of foreign aid in sub-Saharan Africa, and the U.S. government has a defense agreement with the Ethiopian government, where they are providing military training, security and intelligence sharing, and other logistical support. What we are asking is the aid that is being sent to Ethiopia, our tax dollars are essentially being used against my brothers and the brothers of so many Oromo Americans who were present in attendance today. So Congress has a lot of tools, and we are asking that the U.S. Congress suspend all military and non-essential, non-humanitarian aid to Ethiopia until such time that the Ethiopian government can actually provide guarantees that the security forces are not going to use it against peaceful protesters.
Mohammed Ademo is a journalist from Ethiopia's Oromo region. He was speaking with me from Washington, D.C. Zimbabwean police yesterday blocked a demonstration that had been organized by members of the Africa Unity Square pressure group to protest against the assault of Patson Zamora during the May Independence Day celebrations held in Harare. Correspondent Thomas Chirupasi has more from the capital, Harare.
Police in anti-riot gear blocked members of the Occupy Africa Unity Square, a pressure group led by missing activist Itai Zamara, from protesting against the assault of the activist's brother, Patson Zamara, who staged a one-man demonstration during the main independence celebrations held in Harare. Patson Zamara was beaten by suspected state security agents while staging the demonstration at the National Sports Stadium, where President Robert Mugabe was due to address thousands of people to mark the country's 36th independence anniversary. He was holding a banner inscribed, "Zimbabwe is independent, but we are not free." OAUS coordinator Jack Frey said members of his group were dispersed by heavily armed police at the Africa Unity Square just outside Parliament, where they intended to protest against Zamara's beating in front of legislators who were making their way into Parliament.
Basically, we had received communications that some of our comrades were on their way. So we went to the park and sat down in order to wait for them, and we were just sitting and discussing. Like anybody else in the park, the police arrived, saw us there. Obviously, they were watching for us and told us that, no, we're not allowed to sit on this lawn. They were quite rude about it, and they started clearing out everybody in the park.
Another OAUS member, Charles Nyoni, said the bashing of Patson Zamara and the abduction of his elder brother Itai last year was not expected in an independent country.
It is indeed a sad thing that still they haven't decided yet to bring back Itai, whom they borrowed and forgot to return him to us. But we don't lose hope on that one, because we anticipate that very soon they will do so.
Patson Zamara's lawyer, Gift Mtisi, said his client was assaulted by unidentified people at the National Sports Stadium while protesting and was later handed to police, who released him without any charges laid against him. Police spokesperson, Senior Assistant Commissioner Charity Charamba, said the police were not responsible for Patson Zamara's assault, adding that they are also worried by the disappearance of his brother Itai. Reporting from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
A popular Kenyan cartoon series, Tinga Tinga Tales, has been adapted into a live musical performance. In the stage version, the actors dress up as animals and other characters to teach children African folk tales. Lenny Ruvaga reports for VOA from Nairobi.
This performance tells the tale of why the chameleon changes color. Tinga Tinga started as a Kenyan animated TV series in 2010. Tinga, 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 tinga. In the stage version, acclaimed actor John Sibi Okumu plays Mr. Simba, which is Swahili for lion.
It's a different type of acting. So for this is audience participation, drawing a response and seeing people with very happy, happy, smiling faces and shaking hands and dancing with mum and dad.
So far, around 5,000 children have watched the musical.
I liked it because I watch Tinga Tinga most of the times, and it's funny.
If you teach kids with creativity and imagination, their minds open up.
Claudia Lloyd created both the TV show and the musical.
It allows them to kind of realize that they've got choices in life and they can make up stories and everything isn't by rote. So it's very important to me that Tinga is fantastical and full of imagination and creativity.
Lloyd says she plans to adapt more of the show's episodes for the stage. Lenny Ruvaga for VOA News, Nairobi.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa's Pulse, and here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Good Wednesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa sports news, we begin with fencing. African champions Tunisia amassed 6 gold, 3 silver, and 4 bronze medals to top the medal table at the Africa Fencing Championships, which ended in the Algerian capital, Algiers, on Tuesday. Egypt are runners-up with 5 gold, 3 silver, and 5 bronze medals. Senegal are a distant third with 1 gold and 1 silver medal. Algeria placed 4th with 4 silver and 7 bronze medals. Medals among 12 countries that participated in the 6-day event. Turning to rugby, Namibia pipped the United States of America 46-44 as Spain dismissed Hong Kong 44-8 in Group A action at the start of the World Rugby Under-20 Trophy in Harare, Zimbabwe on Tuesday. Samoa outplayed Zimbabwe 54-24 and Fiji edged Uruguay 38-34 in Group B fixtures. In football, Mozambique and Zambia drew 4-4 4 as Tunisia outclassed hosts South Africa 7-1 in Group A action at the Futsal Africa Cup of Nations in Johannesburg on Tuesday. Mozambique topped Group A with 7 points. Zambia has 4, while Tunisia and South Africa have 3 points each. Consequently, Mozambique and Zambia advance to the semifinals. Today, Wednesday, Morocco play Egypt as Libya tackle Angola in Group B action. Libya lead the group with 6 points. Egypt has 4, Libya 1, and Angola have no point. In volleyball, Egypt edged Rwanda by 2-1 in the final at the Africa Continental Cup in women's beach volleyball at Lake Jabi in Abuja, Nigeria. Nigeria dismissed Mauritius 2-0 in the bronze medal playoff. Morocco placed 5th, followed by Sierra Leone, Namibia, Gambia, Mozambique, and Ghana in that order. Consequently, Egypt has qualified for the women's beach volleyball contest at the 2016 Rio de Janeiro Olympics. Rwanda and Nigeria get another chance to qualify for the Olympics at the Beach Volleyball Continental Cup Finals in Sochi, Russia, from the 4th to the 10th of July. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Here's our listener mail for this Wednesday morning, April 20th.
This is Bapa Adamare Fota from Gombe local government area of Adamawa State, Nigeria. Adamawa State government, teachers and other local government workers are dying of poverty and penury. We are dying of hunger because of the government's inability to pay regularly. It is high time that you should understand that there shall be no peace without justice, as there shall be no justice without proper accountability. Thank you.
We thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. You can also call us in the United States at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon is urging the Security Council to restore the full peacekeeping mission in Western Sahara, warning a full-scale war if the mandate is not renewed. Ban said in a report to the Council that terrorist and radical elements can be expected to exploit the situation after Morocco expelled 83 UN staffers from Western Sahara last month. The Security Council plans to vote next month on a one-year extension of the mission that began in 1991 to monitor a ceasefire between Morocco and independence fighters from the Polisario Front. Morocco annexed Western Sahara in 1975 and considers it a part of its territory. The United States has imposed sanctions on the head of Libya's Islamist government in Tripoli after accusing him of attempts to undermine the new United Nations brokered unity government that is seeking to gain a foothold in the war-ravaged country. The sanctions target Khalifa Gil, head of the so-called National Salvation Government, which the Obama administration has described as an unusual and extraordinary threat to U.S. security and diplomatic interests. The U.S. Treasury Department penalties bar Americans from doing business with Guil, and they freeze his holdings in the U.S. jurisdiction. And that's it for this Wednesday, April 20th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very good day.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa. We'll discuss the 2016 World Bank IMF Spring Meetings. Tune in to Straight Talk Africa next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.